Matthew Stafford is potentially on the trade market. The NFL Draft Combine is upon us this week, and Travis Kelce most likely is going to play in 2025. I'm Adam Wright. You're listening to the Fumbleroski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumbleroski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. And so as of later this week, we are going to be getting the NFL Draft Combine, and that goes from February 27th through March 2nd. Plenty of things to watch there, and we'll get to it, including those who won't be there, which is a couple for the second year in a row, a couple top prospects expected not to participate. But we're going to start off with Matthew Stafford. So there's been some trade rumors flowing around in the latter half of the 2024 season and into this offseason, which is that Matthew Stafford could get traded from the LA Rams to somewhere else. The guy is relatively old, but for a quarterback, he still has a few years left in him, potentially. I mean, we don't always get our Tom Brady's, but you can get some good production out of quarterbacks in their late 30s. It happens all the time. That being said, he has been granted permission to gauge trade interest per Tom Pelissero. And as of this morning, Jeremy Fowler said that he does expect Matthew Stafford to be a Ram in 2025, but he also expects that he gets paid plenty of money. This is fairly significant because if he ends up getting traded, then he gets traded to one of the quarterback needy teams, and that may shake up the NFL draft with plenty of quarterback needy teams. It also shakes up where Aaron Rodgers ends up going, where Sam Darnold ends up going, Russell Wilson. But if they keep him and decide to open their wallets to keep him here, let me remind you, their free agency class has both of their starting tackles currently heading to free agency. And as of right now, we do not. Alaric Jackson, their left tackle, has not been franchise tagged. As of right now, Joe Noteboom has not been franchise tagged. And if you go ahead, and I think there's a strong possibility that Alaric Jackson stays on the Rams and maybe Joe Noteboom. If you go out of your way to give this old quarterback, Matthew Stafford, a much larger deal, I think it all but guarantees that not only are at least one of the two gone, there's a strong possibility that it's going to be your most expensive guy, which is Alaric Jackson, a guy who you don't want to see go out the door. I already believe that there's a good chance he leaves. If he signs this deal, there's a lot of offensive line needy teams out there that are willing to open up their wallets for Jackson and Noteboom. You have a chance to keep both of them. If you go and give Matthew Stafford all of this money, there's a strong chance you lose both. CJ, your thoughts?
Well, for starters, you mentioned the Matt Stafford's, you know, a bit old for quarterbacks, at least, or for players in general. He's 37. And it's not like
I knew it was around that age.
Yeah. I just wanted to, you know, add some context. So it's not like we've seen any like drastic visual decline, right? Like, it's not like, oh my God, like he's, you know, it's not like Aaron Rodgers where he's just not passing the eye test anymore. But, you know, he's still good. The thing is, if you're a team and, you know, you're sniffing around Matt Stafford, you know, via trade, you got to say, is it worth it? Because you already know my stances on trading for guys you have to extend, you know, like these one-year rental guys. So you have to pay to get him in the building, and then you have to pay the player, right? You basically have to pay twice. You have to pay for the privilege to pay. That is so stupid, and which is why, once again, I don't believe in these one-year rental types like the trade and extend guys, but whatever. So here's the thing. This is per NFL insider Peter Schrager. Matt Stafford wants to be paid over $50 million a year on a new contract. So just like that, I'm expecting his trade value to plummet. Because look, is he good? Yeah. Has there been any like severe decline? No, there has not. But are you going to sit here and tell me that he's worth $50 million a year? The answer is no. No, he's not. I mean, I'm pretty sure most quarterbacks can look that good when they throw to Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, you know, of Kyron Williams running out of the backfield, but, you know, it's whatever. I digress. So he apparently said he might, emphasis on might, take less money to stay with the Rams. But honestly, if you're the Rams, I'm not hating the idea of just cutting your losses, because here's the thing. Diana Russini put out a report that said apparently the Rams are comfortable with backup Jimmy Garoppolo, who, by the way, is also a free agent, becoming their starting quarterback if they decide to move on from Matthew Stafford, which already shows that they're planning to, you know, like they're exploring all eventualities, which, I mean, obviously most GMs would, you know, try to prepare for anything. However, the fact that they are considering this, that's smoke. And where there's smoke, there's fire. And the thing is that $50 million price tag with Stafford is scaring a lot of teams off, most notably the Steelers. Apparently, you know, the Steelers are another team that's sniffing around them. And they apparently have said they would not pay that $50 million a year price tag. And once again, if you're a team, why would you? And the only saving grace that the Rams have as far as the way cap space going is Cooper Kupp. You know, he's going to be traded. It's a matter of when, right? Not if. However, if you want a team to absorb his entire contract, then you're probably not going to get a whole lot out of it. And I feel like the Rams would like to get, you know, something of value for him, right? I mean, it would make sense. But for me, even if you do, let's just say you find a team that takes all of Kupp's contract, right? And, you know, then you can say, oh, well, we're just going to go, you know, keep Matt Stafford. That seems like a financially wise decision. It's not even just Nope, Boom, and Jackson, right? Wide receiver three, DeMarcus Robinson, young outside linebacker, Mike Hocht, Jimmy G, like you said, the guy who you would be comfortable going with is also a free agent. Deep threat, Tutu Atwell, linebacker, Christian Roseboom, who, by the way, is like extremely underrated. Starting strong safety, John Johnson, swing tackle, Connor McDermott. So, oh yeah, and starting corner, Akella Witherspoon as well. This really slept on defensive tackle, Bobby Brown. So the thing is, they're not stars, but there are starters that are also free agents. And you can kiss all of, if not most of, if not all of them goodbye if you get back Stafford. You better hope that he doesn't want $50 million a year like he hinted with, if he stays with you, the Rams. But I don't know. I kind of feel like he's gone at this point. If they have said they're comfortable going with their backup Jimmy G, meaning they'd have to re-sign him, then that points to Stafford leaving.
Yeah. Well, here's my question, though.
Yo.
What kind of price do you think Matthew Stafford would command as far as trade value if the Rams were to deal him away? So teams that need a quarterback, going down the list, it would probably start, I mean, teams that would command a first round pick, that is. I don't think the Raiders would give up this year's first, because it's the number six overall pick. You can't give up. You can't give that up.
Not for Stafford.
You can't give that up for a 37-year-old quarterback, as good as Stafford is. And I believe still is, by the way. Perhaps the Seahawks. If they decide they want to move on from Geno Smith, which reports reports say that they're going to keep him around and extend Geno. But if they move on from him and trade a late first for Matthew Stafford.
Would they really trade Stafford in division, though, I guess is my question. That would be an in-division trade, and that's really rare, especially with quarterbacks. That would be, respectfully, a really stupid idea if they decided to do that.
Probably. I'm just looking at other teams over here. There's really not much as far as quarterback needy teams in the back half, because I mean they're all teams that just went to the playoffs. Like usually those teams do have a quarterback. The only team that I can think of really is the Seahawks with the 18th overall pick.
Yeah, but the
18 overall for Matthew Stafford. If I'm the Seahawks, I might do that. When's the next time they're going? I mean, when is the time that they are going to have a draft pick high enough to find a quarterback to be their franchise guy?
I mean, you know, you're right. It's just, once again, what can the Rams actually get for him, though, like you asked? Because as far as I go, I don't think that any team would be willing to give up a first. And frankly, if I'm a GM, I don't give a damn what the Rams want. If you have to trade for a quarterback who is openly demanding that much money, then no, I'm probably not going to trade him. I mean, trade for him at least. Like $50 million a year, just not worth a first. If I'm a GM, there's no way in hell. I don't know, but once again, that's just my opinion. That's where I stand. Is there a GM that will be willing to do that? There very well could be. Wouldn't be a smart GM, but he could be out there.
As far as all quarterbacks go, all teams that need quarterbacks go, obviously in the top three, there's the Tennessee Titans, the Cleveland Browns, and the New York Giants. But they're not giving up a. I mean, as far as I know, they wouldn't give up a top three pick. There's the New York Jets who are sitting at seventh, and the Vegas Raiders who are sitting at sixth. But again, a top seven pick for Matthew Stafford, I don't think so. Maybe if they traded a 2026 first, okay, then we might be on to something. But the New Orleans Saints, they're at nine, number nine for Matthew Stafford.
Seems like a bit much.
It's a little bit much for a 37-year-old quarterback. Now, if Stafford was still in his early 30s or his 20s, okay, yeah, give up that pick, because there's nothing more important than a quarterback that can win you a Super Bowl. However, if he's 37, you maybe you'll get 2 years out of him. Maybe. If you have anything left. I mean, not always. Quarterbacks can't always go that long. Most of the time they do. If health allows them. But it's not a guarantee. So are you giving up a top 10 pick for Matthew Stafford? I don't think so. Maybe a late first. Like I said, Seattle, I can see it. But as you mentioned, giving up, trading a quarterback in division to make the Seahawks significantly stronger. Their defense is getting younger, getting better. Offensive line needs some work, but if they got, with the weapons that they have, giving them Matthew Stafford would automatically make them one of the stronger teams in that division.
No, yeah, it definitely would. So now that I'm really thinking about it, I think if you're the Rams, you're basically just screwed. You know, you got to pay him that much and he's unmovable. And the only way you do is if you basically accept peanuts in return. I don't see personally any scenario where this ends well for them.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on and we're going to get to some NFL Combine coverage. That's all next. We're going to get into, well, few top prospects, some notable prospects who are not playing. Some of it is more justified with injuries. Others, they're just not participating just because they don't see the value in it. And who could blame them? That's next. This is the Fumbleroski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
All right. We are back. Fumbleroski Podcast. Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros. All right. So the NFL Draft Combine starts later this week on February 27th, and it goes all the way into March 2nd. A couple notable attendees, such as Travis Hunter, who wants to play both positions. He's registering as a corner, but he's also saying, wait, I am participating in some of the wide receiver drills, so don't rule me out as a wide receiver just yet. I'm just participating as a corner. And that does show off that he does have a preference of where he wants to play. He wants to do both, but it appears he likes corner a little bit more. But it may also depend on who drafts him. If the Patriots end up taking him at 4, it's hard to see him playing. I mean, I don't know where the Patriots are thinking and what any other wide receiver needy team thinks, but it's hard to see him being drafted to play corner if that team needs a wide receiver, because the coaches are just going to play you where they want to put you. Either way, another guy is Will Campbell. Everyone is going to be looking at his arm measurements, which is interesting. But what people won't be able to look at is Ashton Jeanty, who will not be participating, the Boise State running back. Shedeur Sanders is not throwing. And Cam Ward is considering not throwing either. He's still on the fence about that. So for the second year in a row, a couple of our top prospects in this draft are not going to participate. So if you remember, last year, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May all did not throw because they knew they were going to be top 3 picks. They said, why are we throwing? Why are we throwing in an event that does not really accurately portray our skills, has a history of doing that, and potentially tanking our draft stock? Now, a lot of people like to say, well, it's a competitive thing. If they're afraid that they'll do poorly, then what does that say about them? That would make sense. If this was an accurate measurement on how these players will be in the NFL, it would make sense. However, it doesn't, because it doesn't accurately portray their actual playing ability on the field. You want to know that Ashton Jeanty is fast? Watch game film. If you want to know that Shedeur Sanders can sling it, watch a Colorado game. So I kind of understand the issue here. And again, like I said last year, we posted a reel about it. These prospects aren't dumb. They know that this event does not really accurately portray their skills. And if they have a bad combine, it tanks their draft stock and they end up being drafted by a team that doesn't really want them or is just settling for them. It's a much less, and they get much poorer treatment if they're a lower draft pick than if they're higher. So why would they throw? Why would they participate? Ashton Jeanty, we already know, is going to be the first running back taken off the board. I would expect him to become a Dallas Cowboy, but who the hell knows what that old fart is thinking over there in Dallas. You would think, but we'll see. So I found that to be a little interesting. Got reports yesterday. Also, another guy who is not participating, and the reason I didn't mention him at first, because he's fighting through injuries. Abdul Carter is not participating for a lingering shoulder injury that he played through during the college football playoffs, which is understandable. And we also know that he's probably going to be a top four pick. In fact, I'll go as far as to say he will be. But even if he did, let's say he wasn't fighting through a shoulder injury and he didn't participate. Who the hell cares? Really, who cares? It just does not accurately portray these players. And if they overperform, then they end up being overdrafted over players who did deserve it, right? The John Rosses of the world, the Trayvon Walkers of the world. Trayvon Walker in, I believe it was 2021?
2022.
He was projected to be a late first round pick. Then the NFL draft combine happens, and he ends up being the number one overall pick over Aiden Hutchinson, who deserved it, over Kayvon Thibodeau, who is still better than Trayvon Walker. You look at all those players, and Trayvon Walker ended up being taken first overall. And now the Jaguars, we can't fault just the combine, because the Jaguars were dumb enough to take him.
Trent Baalke.
They could have easily just taken Aiden Hutchinson and ignored the smoke, but they didn't. So I just don't think it's an accurate representation on how the sport is played. It's not a track meet that they're training for. It's the NFL, which is very different. Maybe it measures athletic ability. Maybe you can hold some stock to it. But I just think it messes up the draft order. Draft boards get all screwed up. It's why you kind of have to take some of these mock drafts right now with a grain of salt, despite the fact that the draft itself is about a month and a half away. Despite all of that, you have to take all these mock drafts with a grain of salt, because the draft combine is almost certainly going to mess something up. It's going to jumble everything up, and you're going to get some player somehow who's going to get overdrafted, or somebody's going to have their draft stock tank. Here's another guy I want to look at. Teteroa McMillan. And I think this is going to accurately portray him, because I think the guy is slow as molasses. You see him play, and maybe he just has straight line speed fine. He has no explosiveness at all.
No, he does not.
Huge, and clearly he doesn't know how to control it. He has good route running skills. I'll give him that. He has very good hands. I'll give him that. Great size, and he knows how to use it. The problem is he has no explosiveness, and he's not very fast either. Now, again, we're going to be watching that 40 time. But if he tanks it, then get ready for him and his draft stock to tank. And if he ends up working out, now I don't believe he will. I don't love McMillan as a draft pick. But if he ends up panning out after his draft stock tanks, let's say he falls all the way to 20 and he pans out when he was supposed to be a top 10 pick. That's another bad look for the combine. CJ, your thoughts?
First of all, as the OG McMillan hater, I'd like to say, oh yeah, he's slow. And first I want to talk about, there's this one thing that all of his mostly Arizona fans have been saying. Well, regular speed and game speed are different. He's football fast. And it's like, what if he runs a fast combine? I'm like, okay, cool. Game speed, football fast, cool. Watch film. Like, actually get off your keyboards and watch film. He couldn't get separation in the Big 12 and you expect him to get separation in the league. That's stupid. And if you see his separation issues in college and you say that won't follow him to the league, you are stupid and you don't deserve to watch football. And the combine, look, I get it. I get why the players don't want to. Because if you think about it, if you're a top prospect, right, you know, like your Ashton Gentes, your Cam Wards, your Abdul Carters. First of all, actually, Carter gets a pass. He's hurt. You know, he's still got that shoulder issue he got in the college football playoffs. Totally get it. But think about it this way. You have nothing to gain from it and everything to lose. If you turn in a bad combine performance and you're projected to be a top pick, that's just going to take a sledgehammer to your resume. It sucks, but that's the thing. You literally have nothing to gain from being good. You know, best case scenario, you solidify yourself. Worst case scenario, you fall out of the top 10. But, you know, Adam, you covered that. But on a player-by-player basis, Genty, I get it and I don't. Because I don't know if you've seen, he's already falling in mock drafts. It used to be he was a top 10 pick, and if he wasn't, then he wouldn't get past Dallas. The most recent mock draft I saw him going at like 20 to Pittsburgh. He's falling. There's no way around it. He is falling because it's almost like teams realized, oh, wait, maybe Philly's the exception, not the rule, and running backs in the first round are still a luxury.
Let's go over the top 10 picks, and you tell me if they want a running back with their number one pick. Tennessee Titans, they're going quarterback. No. Browns absolutely quarterback. Giants quarterback, if not best player available. New England quarterback. Fuck.
What? No.
Excuse me. I'm muscle memory. Best player available. Mm-hmm. Jacksonville, best player available. Vegas, best player available. Maybe.
No, luxury. That is the ultimate luxury. They're offensive line is still terrible, and their defenders couldn't cover. I mean, their defensive backs literally could not cover a traffic cone. Except for maybe Nick Mobbs.
Jets, best player available or offensive line. Mm. Panthers, best player available or wide receiver.
Yeah, wide receiver.
That reeks of McMillan, by the way.
Yeah.
Ugh. New Orleans Saints. They have Kamara. All I'm saying is I don't see one that even needs a running back. I don't think it's a matter of – I don't think it's on Ashton Gentry. Not so 9 was New Orleans, and then Chicago, the Bears, they kind of need a tackle.
Yeah.
San Francisco, they still have McCaffrey. Then it's Dallas. That's the only team that really reeks of running back needs. Is it really on Genty, or is it just the fact that the top 10 teams in the draft really don't need a running back?
I mean, it's not on Genty per se, but I don't know what to tell you. He's still falling down the draft boards. Like, nothing we can say can change that. I mean, it used to be he was going to go top 10. I mean, I could see the Raiders trying to go all flash and get him, and I could definitely see a team like the Saints reaching on him. But I don't know. Once again, running backs are just – in the first round especially, they are luxury picks. And a lot of people disagree, but a lot of people would be wrong. And as far as Cam Ward not throwing, I get it, you know, but I disagree. But not for the reason you think. You know, people are talking about how, oh, it's an indictment on character, right? If they don't do it, you know, they're afraid they're going to look bad or whatever. Like, well, I don't agree with that argument. All I'm going to say is that's a red herring as far as the combine goes, okay? Because Cam Ward, already he has character issues. Like, you remember that bowl game, right, where Miami was playing and he subbed himself out and like didn't and like refused to play after halftime. That's your character concern. And honestly, this at the combine, you know, where he's like not gonna do any drills throwing wise, that's nothing new. Like, I mean, I just think that's like not important. Because if I'm a scout and I saw what he pulled during that bowl game, I'm sorry, red flags flying. Like, that is a lack of character. It's a lack of leadership. And then again, I just don't like Ward as a prospect anyway. Sanders not doing it. I mean, I get, once again, like I said, I understand. I think he should, because he's another one that in many scenarios is falling down draft boards as well. In fact, Ward has officially overtaken Sanders as the best QB prospect, which admittedly is something that I don't agree with. And everybody's saying, well, Shedeur Sanders just throws screens and dinks and dunks. And to which I say, okay, Ward, I don't think has ever beaten a top 25 school in his career. He throws weight around with bad teams, and then when a good team comes to town, he gets his doors blown off. So do with that what you will. The thing is, the combine itself is almost becoming irrelevant, at least if you're a good player. If you're like a fringe first rounder, maybe like a mid rounder, you want to show off your skills, right? But if you are, I don't want to say lock, but if you're fairly certain to go in the top 10, once again, you have nothing to gain and everything to lose.
Right.
And you also have your pro day too, so there's that.
Listen, all I'm saying is that there are a lot of teams in the top 10 that really don't need Ashton Jeanty. The Dallas Cowboys literally do. And for that, it seems like maybe he knows where he's going. If he's really going to, I mean, league executives talk. It's not like they talk about what they, who they're taking, but maybe you can kind of gauge what they need. And they also, they talk to the prospects that are going in drafts too. I just feel like there, it makes a lot of sense for Jeanty. He's the number one running back prospect in this draft, and probably one of the better ones in recent memory. So I don't hate it. I really don't. All right. We're going to move on. I think we've done our fill of combine talk for one season. But we're probably going to talk about it plenty more on Friday because, right, it will be right in the midst of it. That's the 28th on our Friday episode. So we're going to, it starts on the 27th. So we'll have our stuff to talk about. Again, all eyes will be on Will Campbell's arm size because.
Oh, hold on. No. Before we stop, that's something I meant to say. The arm size thing is so stupid.
Yes. I'm not saying it's not stupid, but that's what the.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you.
That's what the knock has been. You know,
I know. I'm not yelling at you. It's just like that's
his
like
eyes, his it's arms like are big enough.
Of a guard. Does it matter? Remember when everybody was freaking out about Joe Burrow's hand size and how he didn't have the big enough hands to play quarterback? Look at how wrong you were, analyst. And this is the same thing they did with Peter Skoronski. He was like the number one ranked tackle, and then it was just this massive hit piece against him that his arms, he's better as a guard. Like, does it really matter? Like, oh, his arms are an inch short. Oh my God, the world's coming to an end. Like, good.
If his arms are up to snuff amongst league executives, then he will be the number one prospect who will clinch it. I'm not justifying it at all.
No, I know you're not. But it's something I forgot to mention.
And also, sometimes these things can be problems. Like you mentioned Joe Burrow's hand size. They also mentioned Kenny Pickett's hand size, and that actually became a problem. The kid actually blows.
Dude, that I'm sorry, that's such a red herring, and it's a bad faith comparison because his hand size was the least of Pickett's problems. That was like number 10 of his red flags. Like, other than the fact he couldn't read a defense, he didn't have an arm, you know, like hand size was just. Finding out Pickett had small hands is like finding out you lost your remote after your house burned down. It's like, it's pretty far from your mind when there's other problems.
All I am trying to tell you is that these executives care about that. And whether you like it or not, the NFL draft combine will either artificially inflate the value of a prospect or it will tank
artificially
it.
Depress it. I mean, yeah, no, that's what Will it does.
Campbell, he is the only flaw of his game, the only downside has been that his arms are small. If it turns out that they are actually not that small, then he's just book it. He's going to be the top prospect in this draft as far as tackles go. And the Patriots may end up biting. They may end up taking him at 4. So just think about that for a second.
I still don't like that, but all right. Just because I'm not big on O-line in like the top 5.
I'm not either. But Will Campbell has had a lot of buzz to him. And the only hit on him has been his arm size. The kid has a great attitude. He's produced amazingly on the team over at LSU. And if it turns out his arms are not that short, boy, he is going to have his stock is going to go through the roof. So just remember that. Also, same with Tedderick McMillan. In the same way that if his speed is really bad, that it could tank his draft stock, if he ends up being fast. Because again, that's the only thing that's been held against McMillan, is that he's slow. If it turns out that he's actually really fast and it's just there's something wrong with the way he runs, that it makes it look like he's slow, expect him to be potentially the first wide receiver taken in the draft. And some teams may not end up pressuring Travis Hunter to go corner, to go wide receiver over corner, if there's McMillan who is actually available. Just saying. So a couple of things may end up happening, but we'll get to a little more combine talk on Friday. But in the meantime, the Chiefs GM, Brett Veach, has come out with some interesting news about Travis Kelce, about his expectations to play. That's all next. What it means for the Chiefs and potentially the rest of the NFL. All that is next. This is the Fumbleroski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumbleroski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros. So, today, Chiefs GM Brett Veach has told reporters that he expects tight end Travis Kelce to play in 2025. Adds that, based off recent conversations, Kelce seems fired up, that he's excited to play in 25. The reason that this is significant, the reason this became a segment for us today, this is something I wanted to touch on. So Travis Kelce is approaching. This is going to be the last year of his contract. He's entering a contract year. He was already unsure of this season, and now Kelce is fired up. What does this kind of tell you? That this is probably, and I'm just speculating, I'm just going off of what I have. All the reports from this season that the Chiefs gave him a window of time to decide, that he's entering a 1-year deal, that, you know, he's fired up now. I mean, it would be a problem if he wasn't, but if he was undecided, now he's like, all right, let's freaking go. And also this is a 1-year deal, and was previously undecided about playing. What does this kind of tell you that I believe this is going to be? This is going to be the final year of his career. Now, one could say, good riddance. Another could also say, it might make the Chiefs a little more dangerous than they already are next year. Because it gives them a little bit of a sense of finality. It gives them a sense that they're nearing the end of this part of the Patrick Mahomes era Chiefs dynasty, and that they're kind of getting a little bit of a last dance type of feel, right? Andy Reid's only going to be coaching for a couple more years. Travis Kelce is going to be 36 by the start of this season. Patrick Mahomes is going to be playing much longer. He's going to be playing at least 8 to 10 years longer. But again, this is the portion of their dynasty where there seems to be, it seems to be they're approaching the end of it. I'm not making any Super Bowl predictions, but if I if you weren't somewhat scared of the Chiefs for next year before, then you should be a little bit now. Because it gives it a little bit of a last dance type feel in the sense that they are going to try and empty the bucket for this portion of the dynasty, right? The New England Patriots, they had their mini first half where they won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. A couple years later, they went 16-0 and went to a Super Bowl. And then most of those guys went on to retire. They aged. And if they were still on the second half of that dynasty, if you weren't named Tom Brady, you weren't making a large impact, which was Vince Wilfork was the only guy who was left from that team. But there was a little bit of a transition period, a 10-year period where the old Patriots aged, the new Patriots came in and grew up, and they started winning Super Bowls. There may be a little bit of a transition phase, and I think with 1 year left in Travis Kelce's career, they have a little bit of extra fire added to them. A little bit extra motivation to try and win this year. It's just something to consider. What do you think, CJ?
I get where you're coming from, but I wouldn't – I mean, I'm not going to write off the Chiefs entirely, but I'm not as scared of them as maybe I should be. Because, look, Super Bowl hangover is very, very real. And please, please, you people watching at home, don't say, but Tom Brady beat it. Is Tom Brady on that team? No. Okay, end of story. But I don't know. The thing is, I know Kelce's fired up, like, ooh. It's like that LeBron gif where he's like, oh, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not afraid of Kelce anymore. I'm just not. The only reason he still looks as semi-decent as he is because Mahomes literally force-feeds him the ball. Like, Mahomes will just chuck the ball at him 10 times a game. That's a lot of their game plan. And even still, Kelce can only hurt his legacy. And I've been very open about this. I believe the past 2 seasons, Travis Kelce, he had a case to be the GOAT tight end. He has played himself out of that conversation. He has put himself behind Gronkowski and Gonzalez. And if he puts up another lackluster year, then maybe he's also played himself out of the top 3. Maybe someone like recent Hall of Famer Antonio Gates leapfrogs him. And I don't see it. Like, I don't see him cracking 1,000 yards. I don't see him getting double-digit touchdowns. Noah Gray, in terms of production, is already nipping at his heels and in many scenarios has overtaken him. His blocking ability is getting worse. Look, last dance or not, the mentality is one thing, but the play has to be there also. I guess that's just what remains to be seen. Frankly, I know you don't want to go out on a loss, but if I'm Kelce, I'm just going to retire, man. Like, you're dating the most famous person in the world, you know, at like, you've helped each other out, you know, you've brought the NFL new fans, and the NFL, at least now more than ever, has put her music on the map. Like, I would also say, yeah, no, I don't want to hear it. I'm just saying, like, there's been mutually beneficial. Like, dude, just like, go out on some beach somewhere, propose, go to your podcast. Like, that's pretty much it. You know, like, there's really not a lot you can do. You can only hurt yourself. So, I mean, that's it. Like, there might be a last dance mentality, but will there be like a last dance level play on the field? Will you go 15-2 again? Probably not. Once again, I will say Super Bowl hangover is very, very real.
There's no guarantee that it won't improve a little bit. As far as Travis Kelce's production on the field, and it literally happened with Rob Gronkowski later in his career, In 2018, Gronkowski did not look like the same guy. He looked beat up. It looked like 10 years in the NFL kind of got to him. And then you got to the point, he retired in 2019. He came out of retirement. Do you remember how rejuvenated he looked? Just in year one in 2020, it didn't show as far as the results on the field went, but that's because there were so many targets on that team. But 623 yards and 7 touchdowns. And in his age 31 season, with his play style of running through your face. And then in 2021, it showed even more. In just 12 games, over 800 yards. Over a 17-game span, that's like 1,100 yards right there. And that's with Rob Gronkowski's play style, with a little bit of a spark added to you. I think if Travis Kelce has even 75% of what Gronk had, I believe that if this is truly how he feels, that this is his last season, that maybe, just maybe, he gets a little bit of a boost from it. It's a little bit of a boost. Gets to go out potentially as a champion.
Once again, I just disagree just because, like, you know, I mean, you can do the whole Gronk argument, but I mean, they're just two different players. You know, once again, he can literally only hurt himself. He's basically a non-factor. And when Rashee Rice comes back and they develop Worthy more, Kelsey's not even going to be the number one option. And when he gets force-fed less, I think it's more likely that he plays himself out of the top three tight end conversation than he does win a Super Bowl. But I'll end on that.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. But I think it would be a good story if the Chiefs manage to get a really good season out of Kelce and they go out, they win that one Super Bowl. Imagine losing a Super Bowl, then going back and winning it after failing to go back-to-back and winning three in a row. That would be a pretty good story because – I mean, we've already witnessed that kind of story from the previous dynasty, the New England Patriots. So it's just a thought that I had, you know, and Travis Kelce is one of the great tight ends in our league's history. And he's playing with an all-time great quarterback. And he is still their number one weapon right now, as far as Patrick Mahomes' weapons. So it's pretty noteworthy that this could potentially be his last year of his career. Because not only could it be the last year of his career, it could also be the end of this half, at least, of the Chiefs dynasty, if it even continues later on down the road. So we'll see. All right. That's all the scheduled content we have for today, but do you have anything else?
Nope.
All right. I am very, very, as a Patriots fan, this is just some Patriots stuff, very encouraged by Mike Vrabel's words during his press conference at the Combine. I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to spend and they're going to be aggressive on it. But that's just me. All right, that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Fridays at 5. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast to keep up with our podcasts and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Over and out.